Morse code. Years ago, the FCC required all hams to know Morse code. And that made very good sense back then, as that's how hams talk to each other. It was just as sensible as requiring translators at the UN to be fluent in more than one language. How could they translate if they did not know at least two? Well, the government, as you know, acts slowly. Very slowly. And it wasn't until 1992 that they dropped the requirement for the technician class hams to know the Morse code. It looks as if they might eliminate the Morse code requirement entirely during the next year or so. But while they've been making such movements that way, they haven't dropped the code requirement for general or extra class just yet. Odds are they will soon. Morse code is a requirement that's been a contentious issue amongst hams for years. Many old-timers, and some who wish they were old, view Morse code as a form of hazing, a rite of passage that everybody needs to go through solely because they did. Thank heavens our entire world doesn't have that kind of mindset, otherwise I'd have spent many a cold winter afternoon sitting in an outhouse doing my thing because Granddaddy did it that way.
Well, as things stand right now, if you're a technician class ham and pass the 5-word-per-minute Morse code test, you get some special HF band privileges. The other no-code technicians won't have that. As a technician with code, we'll give you the novice license privileges below 30 megahertz. While it doesn't sound like much, it's a nice add-on to the technician license. Once you pass the code test, you can get a CSCE, Certificate of Successful Completion of Examination, from your volunteer examiner. You'll need to keep that, as the FCC will not send you any other paperwork to confirm it. They are a bit cheap now and then.
And that's good. It keeps our taxes perhaps a half a penny less. These ham licenses allow you to operate the radio anywhere the FCC regulates radio frequencies. That's Federal Communications Commission. That's United States Federal Communications Commission. Remember that. Pretty much, this matches any place the United States Postal Service has mail delivery and then some. You do not have to report to the FCC your exact movements. But you do have to maintain a U.S. Postal Service address that is valid in their records, so that they can get a hold of you if need be. There's also no restrictions on how far away the station you are talking to is, or what countries you can talk to. Now, on the other hand, the other countries may not allow their hams, if they have them, to talk with American hams from the U.S., but U.S. hams don't have to worry about being locked up for talking to some foreigners, at least not yet. There are restrictions, however, if you're sending messages for your unlicensed friends or letting them talk through your radio, however. More on this later. Your ham license is really two licenses in one. You've got the operator license and the station license. The operator side is tied to what class of ham license you have. That is, what frequencies you can use. This is what gives you the rights to sit down at another ham station and use his equipment on frequencies that you are allowed to use, which could be more than the station owner is allowed to use. The station part assigns you a call sign and authorizes you to have transmitting equipment, the station, as it were. These are presently merged into the same piece of paper and appear as one, but that wasn't always the case.
By the way, after you pass the license exam, the papers get sent to the FCC. Your ham license is valid as soon as the data appears in the FCC database.
They call this the Universal Licensing System Database, or ULS.
You don't have to wait until the paper license arrives in the mail. And that wasn't always the case either. Presently, this means you can be on the air in about 2 weeks after passing the test, a far cry from many other countries where the process can drag on for a year or two.
At the moment, ham licenses are issued for a 10-year term and should be renewed within 90 days of expiring. Ham license exams are no longer given at FCC offices, but are given by volunteer hams at test sessions they set up all across the country. Many radio clubs have groups who give license exams, but there are many independent test sessions too. The questions used in the exams are predetermined by a panel of hams who live in an ivory tower. All these questions and answers, it's multiple choice, are made public. If you're good at memorizing things, you can get your extra class license right away without difficulty. But while the technician exam has only 35 questions, there are about 350 possible questions they can pull those 35 from. So it does pay to learn at least some of the material as opposed to memorizing answers.
Every few years, the question pools are changed and updated. The FCC changes the rules from time to time, too. That's a good thing.
That's true. It is a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing to, you know, it keeps a baby there.
And it's good to keep a copy of the current FCC regulations somewhere handy for reference, even if it's just a link to the rules online.
You'll find many hams don't stay abreast of all the regulations and sometimes cite rules that were dropped years ago or don't realize that they are breaking some new regulation.
So, in a nutshell, the exams are given by people called volunteer examiners, VEs. These guys are managed by an overseeing group called a volunteer examiner coordinator, or VECs. There are a dozen or so VECs in the U.S., the American Radio Relay League being one, the W5YI group being another, etc. Periodically, each VEC sends a representative to a meeting where they hash through what questions to have on each exam. The questions and answers you'll see on practice exams, either online or in books, will indeed be the same as on the test, and it doesn't matter which VEC is overseeing the VE team administering the tests, they all have the same tests. When you take the test, by the way, you'll have to fill out the FCC form NCVEC Quick Form 605. Boy, that's a mouthful. A typical government form. Thankfully, it's the quick form. The regular FCC Form 605 is a bit longer, quite a bit longer, many pages. Just FYI, they do ask for your Social Security number, which is supposed to not be used for ID. But if you don't want to provide the number, they conveniently will not provide you with a ham license. If you want to contest this, please get your congressman involved now, as the volunteer examiners don't have any say over it.
You also need to bring two forms of ID, preferably both photo IDs. If you've passed any previous ham exams, bring the original and a photocopy of the license and or any CSCEs you have obtained. Bring pencils, too, and a good eraser. A pocket calculator with all programming erased is also okay. There is a fee for taking the exam. If you don't pass the exam the first time, you can try again as many times as you like, as long as the examiners are willing to let you take it, and you will still have to pay a fee every time, however.
Exam sessions need to be staffed by at least three volunteer examiners. To give the technician class exam, all three need to be at least a general class ham or higher.